Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a good time of day to be here because everything's coming back from hunting and gathering. So we've got a few colonies of spoonbills, which is awesome. It's about 250 of them there now, which is really exciting.
Sarah Jane Jensen is part of a team working on protecting and improving this special place right at the bottom of the North Island. 9,000 hectares of lakes and wetlands.
Two lakes, two rivers. Probably about 30 or 40 wetlands. Yeah, it's a huge space.
We're looking out on one of those wetlands at the moment. Tell us about this one.
This one is called Boggy Pond. Not the best name, could do with a wee bit of a rebrand. But this is one of our easier to access sites to really get a good look at one of the parts of the Ramsar, so the internationally recognised wetlands. And we're looking at raupo cabbage trees that are making their way through. But 10 years ago, you would have been looking at a forest of willows. So we would not have been able to see the water at all. And you can sort of see the sort of skeletons.
The remnants of the trees are there, just lying dead
yes.
in the water.
And our birds love them. I think they'll miss them when they go, but hopefully by then we'll have kahikatea and cabbage trees and things we've planted coming up. So, yeah, shags and the spoonbills quite like them.
Now, we're actually looking for something special and we're hoping to hear something special this evening, aren't we?
Yes, yeah, we're quite lucky. We've got a population of Australasian bittern, which are nationally critical, which is the last step before extinction. So they're in the same camp as the kakapo and the wandering albatross. I think they're one of 18 in that sad club, but they're all seemingly doing okay here now, which is really exciting. So we had a few years where we saw what was a rapidly declining population of only 8 male bittern. We watched that stabilize, we stopped seeing it decline, and in the last 2 years we've seen it go up. And this year, I think at these wetlands, our ornithologist Shane Cottle found 19 males and 6 more at a few other wetlands that we also contract him to come in and monitor, which is really exciting. So I say males because they're the only ones that really make much noise, and they're very, very hard birds to spot, hence why we're going to try and listen for them. They're perfect raupo or bulrush hiders, and they have a freeze response. So they quite literally freeze with their head straight up in the air and they look exactly like a stick.
So pretty hard for you to spot even with your binoculars.
Yes, yep. I've probably seen 3 or 4 since working around these wetlands. I've heard more, lots more.
How long are they here for?
They're permanent residents here.
Permanent residents?
Yes, yes.
They're not migratory birds.
They don't move. They don't seem to move too much between locations, so they'll sort of quietly migrate around. So if you're a chick and you've been kicked out by mum eventually and off you go to find your new spot, they might sort of venture a wee bit further, but they don't seem to really take off and go and find wetlands much, much further away. They're also found in Australia. Like many of our birds, they sort of floated here or flew here on accident and established. They look like herons in the air, but just a bit boxier. There's only a few wetlands with stable populations left, and I think only one other where they've seen an increase. And I can't remember where. I was talking to a birdie about it, and he was saying, we've got the only population on the rise. And I went, no, you don't.
What are the threats to them?
Predation is a really big one. They're very vulnerable nesting on the ground. They make these little sort of perches or platforms, and the females will sit on the nest, and they are just a nice big egg. So they'll be a good target for predators, namely mustelids, and cats are the big targets. And we seem to have been getting good numbers of those.
In New Zealand, mustelids consist of weasels, ferrets and stoats. They were introduced in the 1800s to control rabbits, but are now a problem of their own.
Anything in there? Someone's actually set that one off.
Steve Plale has been in the pest control business for more than four decades and has been setting traps here for 10 years. What sort of numbers have you been catching, Steve?
In the early stages of the trapping program, we were catching predominantly cats and ferrets with huge numbers of hedgehogs as well. They're a predator that's very underrated. But yeah, you're talking about numbers. I was lucky.
You've got some paperwork there.
I dug out some reports that I'd written. So the first year that we implemented the program down here, I'll just give you some figures. Yeah, 20 wild cats, 60 ferrets, 2 stoats, 18 weasels, 87 rats, 169 hedgehogs, 70 mice, 10 magpies, and 4 rabbits. Wow. So that was in the first year.
It's a smorgasbord for them, I suppose.
It is, and the wetlands, because they have such a diverse range of wildlife, particularly birds and things, it's just a food bowl for predators, really. And the wetlands here are surrounded by farmland, so it's just it's an open area for predators to move back in, which is one of the reasons why we just have to keep the trapping going. And it's taken us a long time to get the numbers down to where we've got them at the present point in time, where I believe it's manageable, but you can't take your foot off the brake.
So, Steve, have you got some trap lines along here?
Yep, there's traps every couple hundred metres all the way along this stop bank. This has always been a good area to catch predators along here. And one of the things that actually makes it quite good too is that they mow this periodically, so it creates quite a good runway for small pests to run up and down on. So they're not
perfectly made track for them.
Yeah,
little highway.
That's right. So as soon as they levelled this bank off and got it established years ago, I got my trap line in here straight away, and it's been quite successful, and still is. It's a trap. We've got a trap just here.
Anything in there?
Someone's actually set that one off.
So on the right is the Opurua spillway. So this is part of us trying to control nature a wee bit. The Ruamahanga River was channelised and now bypasses the lake where it would naturally have flowed in. This is a spillway, so we're standing on a stop bank. We can see the stop bank on the other side. And when we do get floods, which we did have a good one last year, that spillway can open up, take the pressure off the river, and then it goes to Lake Wairarapa. So it has been grazed because it sort of keeps that really tall grass down. It's been retired from grazing, same as Wairio wetland on the other side has had grazing in it, and that's been removed. And we can sort of see some of the plantings popping up here from a couple of years ago.
The cabbage trees
popping through. And that was with a primary school, and with Ducks Unlimited, they do lots of really good planting days through here, and we've fenced that off, and we're planting pretty big numbers. So the Wairarapa Moana project has been able to put in 35,000 plants in Kahutara wetland, which connects to this one. And the planting that Ducks Unlimited has been doing, and that pulling the pressure off grazing, there's a lot of natural rewilding, which is really cool to see.
Very satisfying.
Very satisfying. There's been some wet paddocks, but you can see desperately where all these wetlands are trying to form again and where that water really wants to be sitting.
What's that we can hear?
That is a black-backed gull. So there are a nesting colony of those on Onoke Spit, which is a sand spit at the very southern end, and that is our most southern area the project looks after.
How many species of bird are here?
So many. There's a group that have been doing a wading bird count since 1980 something. So for 40 years, they've been coming and walking the whole length of the eastern side of the lake with scopes and binoculars counting. And what they've been able to show of the diversity of rare species is a big reason why we've been able to get that Ramsar International status, because it really is a home to so many birds. So many vagrant ones. We saw a glossy ibis for the first time here, like a bin chicken, but a black one. Which is
what's a vagrant bird, by the way?
A vagrant bird is one that will move around. So they'll fly around. There's Canadian geese that come in as well. There's plenty of ducks. I think if anyone's known of the Wairarapa Moana or been here, it's most likely because they've been duck shooting here. It's a real paradise for duck shooters.
Now, you've been hunting here as well, haven't you, back in the day?
Yes, I've been a duck shooter for over 40 years. Boggy Pond and Matthews has a lot of history in my family. My grandparents used to duck shoot here in the 30s. My father duck shot here. He introduced me to duck shooting down here, so I've had a long history
with that. Let's head over to the other side of the lake now to reflect on how the return of the bittern comes at an important time for local Māori. It's a little windier on this side, where a sliver of native bush among the farmland meets the rough water slapping against the shore.
Kia ora koutou. My name is Rawiri Smith, and I'm a kaitiaki and a kai mahi, or a worker, for my iwi, which is Kahununu ki Wairarapa.
Ra has deep knowledge of this place and its inhabitants, including the elusive bittern, the Matuku Hurepo.
They have a booming voice that they have, and so I imagine that in a choir, they would be the baritone or the bass. Would be their kind of space in the what we sometimes call the dawn chorus of birds. And so the Matuku is a special type of bird, and referenced in Waiata too as being a lonely bird. And they are really secretive birds that have a whare where they live that has to have three sides surrounded so that they push back into the bush, and so that behind them and on the sides is covered with pretty thick plant life. They have to compete actually with pests like rats and mice and a whole range of different pests that attack the eggs.
How prolific were these birds pre-farming times?
They still were a minority bird and often referred to as a lonely bird. And so there wasn't a whole lot of the birds, but I would say that there was greater competition for the habitat that's wetland.
This year, the Moana, including the wetlands, returns to local iwi, part of the Crown's redress for decades of wrongdoing that meant local whānau became alienated from their culture, language and land, including the lake.
And so our lake is very important to us, and that many of the different hapū, or the many different sub-tribes, came to the lake and fished here, came together as people here. And this is our food basket, or the pack and save of early Māori traditional time.
For 16 years now, Mana Whenua have been working with the local and regional council and the Department of Conservation to restore the Moana after more than a century of damage. The stop banks, spillways and river diversions built in the 1960s and 70s were great for farming, but tough on biodiversity.
We would love to see a flourishing habitat for birds, especially native birds and endemic birds. We'd love to see a space that has place for native fish and endemic fish and migrating fish. Our fish, in terms of tuna, go from here to Tonga. Our birds sometimes go to the Caspian, turn to the Caspian Sea. Others go to the Arctic Circle. And so huge amount of travelling that our area can host. And so one of the things that we say about Wairarapa Moana is that we want to see the pua waitanga. So pua wai means the blossoming, and tanga is the concept of blossoming. So if we can realise the potential of the lake, so our lake shouldn't just be for attenuating floodwaters, it should be a habitat for travelling birds. should be a habitat for tropical fish like tuna that have come all the way as glass eels into our waters here in the Wairarapa.
And we're making our way across the edge of the wetland to an area we're hoping to hear the sound of the Australasian bittern.
So I figure our best shot will actually be as we're walking through the Taupo. They'll sort of freeze until they think you're just about to be upon them and then they'll flush. So this will probably be our best shot at seeing them, and then hopefully they start booming. But nature, it's never on cue.
The Taupo, the bulrush, is head high. Perfect habitat for the bird.
It's a really important plant species and it's had a bad rap, and it was burned and cleared for pasture and now it's protected, which is great.
And it's basically a hiding place.
Oh, definitely, yeah. As well as Harakeke, so a lot of the Wellington region will have just been forests of these carex sector, the grasses, the rushes, the Taupo, and the Harakeke, and it will have been a really major resource for Māori. I know it was for Kohanui marae, which is the local marae to here. Harakeke and tuna were two of the big trading items, and they've just come back. I mean, we there are a few stop banks that we mow so that people can walk and enjoy the wetlands and to be able to service the traps. And you can see the Taupo trying desperately to pop up through the grass, so they're really coming away.
What would the bitterns be feeding on?
The sort of meal ticket item would be baby eels or elvers. Tuna would be the absolute favourite. But around here it would be mudfish. We've got these crazy looking things called tadpole shrimp, which look like somewhere between a tadpole and a shrimp. Baby fish, there would have been further at the bottom of the lake, there's patiki as well that come up that far, mallet even come up this far up the lake. We're pretty far inland, so there's some sort of estuarine species that get up this way as well. Enanga, so the white bait, will be a real big meal item for them too. So fish passage is intimately connected with the wetland, and we're lucky that our fish passage team at G-Dub are in my team, so we work quite closely together.
What about the tuna, the eels? Are they coming back?
It's really, really hard to say. I think one of the areas that we've recognised as a big hole in our knowledge here is the status of fish, and we are really wanting to kick into more fish monitoring. The oral history here and the photographs of tuna being lined up on fences and dried and eaten, it was the big trading item. I think it was probably one of the most famous eel migrations, and they just build up at the bottom of Lake Ōnoki and wait for that sandbar to burst.
And the Lake Ōnoki is just below Wairarapa, isn't it?
A very, very big lake.
Feeds into this
yep. And so with the manipulation of rivers and streams and adding bridges and culverts and things, we've made their ability to make their way back up to their ancestral streams quite hard. So it's really hard to say. A lot of the ones we are finding when we net are of a certain size and a certain age, and that can sort of tell you that there might have been periods of time where they can't make their way up, or when flat gates are closed, they can't make their way up. So we're trying to one bridge and flat gate at a time help them that way. We don't know if their population is still declining. It's the big question mark, really, and it's something we need to be doing a lot more for. So any stick that might catch your eye, just double check it, because it's probably our best shot at spotting bittern, as they just look like a pale stick poking right up out of the ground. And that the head is straight up in the air, they're just like a pin. It's quite cool. But if something catches your eye, definitely have another look.
I'm keeping my eyes peeled for the stick.
Manifesting bittern.
Sadly, there was no bittern spotted, despite our best efforts, so we head to a platform just built for bird spotting.
Climbing up to get a better view, and now we can look out
Plenty of swans.
Yes, more than I'd like. But it's the thing that always surprises me is just the sheer mass this valley is, and the two lakes and rivers and wetlands. It's a really, really big area. And there's many endangered birds that will have been here forever and remained here, and it's one of the few pockets left. So for many, it will have been their last refuge. And then as that's been protected and the lake levels have been kept at a place to support them, birds are coming back, and it's really exciting. And for the bittern especially, it's a keystone species. Having them here is a really big deal. And having their population double over 10 years is really exciting, because it shows us that we're doing good. And it's, you don't often get that payoff in conservation. You know that there's a long goal, and you're told if you come back here in 20 years, you'll see this forest or tree developed. That just in 10 years of removing the pressures of willow to let the ropeworm come through, and mostly trapping, keeping those predators back, they've doubled. They've gone from this is a plummeting population, we're watching it go extinct, to doubling it. It's massive. It's really exciting.
Sarah Jane Jensen of Greater Wellington. You also heard from Steve Plale and Rawiri Smith. The Wairarapa Moana Wetlands Project is a collaboration between Ngāti Kahununu Ki Wairarapa, Rangatane o Wairarapa, the South Wairarapa District Council, the Department of Conservation, and Greater Wellington. It was set up in 2008.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.